Okay. I brought with me a visual aid today, which is stalks of wheat.
We've done a visual aid like this before.
I have not brought stalks of wheat to this year before.
Yes, you have. In your old house.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, the reason I brought the wheat, I like to run in the fields around Yad Binyamin. So I didn't actually steal from the field part, but on the other side of the road, you know, where the weeds grow, every now and then you get a nice seed. So I didn't steal any wheat from anybody. I got from the, you know, from the hefker, from the hefker. Right?
So they could take it from the corner of the field. Isn't there supposed to be a section of the field that you can take?
Yeah. It's a very interesting question, and it's a great question. The reason I brought the wheat is because just the reason I actually picked the wheat was because I'm learning in a different shiur that I give, sugya about how they used to roll the wheat in order to eat it. They would roll it in their hands, and the question is, can you do that on Shabbat? And the problem is, nobody has any idea what wheat is. We never see wheat. We don't see grain. We don't see anything. And so I was actually fascinated by the wheat because we're so distant from it, even though it's in the fields around us. The other reason I brought it to you today is because I don't know if you're aware. I was talking to somebody recently. I asked him, my neighbor actually, what about the rains? Is the rain a siman of bracha or not a siman of bracha? As you all well know, right? It's in tradition.
Yeah.
Yes. Modern rains are considered a siman klala. So my boss in our road, he said, it's not a klala, it's ribui tal. It's a lot of dew. It's just extra dew because nobody wants to say a siman klala. But my neighbor said that I'll explain to you in a second. Even though we think that we had such a great year, we said it was a great year, the Kinneret is up, et cetera, the farmers were saying anenu. Farmers had a terrible time this year. And I said, why? He said, because, well, we all know that it rained in January a ton. It was crazy, the amount of rain. And that's fine. And the fields grew. But then in February and March, it didn't rain at all. So the stalks of wheat grew up to a certain point. He said, but the kernels, the critical point for the kernels, their growth depends on the rain in February and March. When, you know, after the stalks grow, then the kernels grow. He said, the rain was so bad that the wheat is so bad, he said, that they're leaving it all for the animals. They can't use it. And something we had no idea. Like I have to verify if it's true or not, but that's what he told me.
There was an article in the newspaper last week about that. Same thing. Saying that the farmers was bad.
They had a terrible year. You know what I'm saying? So the country, on the one hand, had a good year, but the farmers had a terrible year. Very good. So let's ask it this way. Why was rain a siman klala? So the answer is very much to do with the shiur we're going to do today. The answer is that the way agriculture used to work was the wheat grew. They planted in the fall, or whenever they planted, right? And then the wheat grew throughout the winter, grew, until approximately Pesach time, okay? And you see it dries out now. At Pesach time, as the rain ends, it dries out. From Pesach to Shavuot, they would cut it. No, they wouldn't harvest it. They would cut it and have to dry in the fields. They would let it dry. They would just leave it to dry. After it's dry, the difference between this and this is, why do you need it to be dry? You need it to be dry because, I'm going to use one of my precious wheats. Maybe I'll collect more today.
Shredded wheat.
Because then when you thresh it, only when it's dry when you thresh it, then the animals walk on it. And then when you thresh it, apparently, I guess you have to walk on it a lot, right? Yeah, you walk on it, see, you thresh it. In order so that you could separate the wheat from the chaff. Because if it's wet, it won't separate. Nothing will happen. Okay, as we all know from our... See, it's interesting. I don't know what a good wheat kernel looks like, if this is a good wheat kernel or not. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what's supposed to be good or not.
That's good.
That's a good one?
Yeah.
All right, that's a good... Anyway, so it has to... They had to let it dry.
That's not good luck.
It's not a good one. Right. They're terrible. Interesting. So if that's the way the wheat is, then there ain't no wheat this year. At least not from us. Okay, so they had to let it dry out. If it rains after you cut the wheat, I think if it's on the stalks, it's bad. But if it rains after you cut it, what happens if you have a pot? It gets moldy, right? It just destroyed. That's the end of the crop. So that's why rain was a siman klala. Now, interestingly enough, it doesn't work that way. They don't thresh it that way. Now you have this big, you know, truck, machine, thresher, whatever. All in one fell swoop, it cuts it, and threshes it and separates it in one fell swoop, in one shot. So I was wondering,
what? So it doesn't lie in the field.
Never lies in the field. All you see in the field now, when they cut it, is the hay that they then collect afterwards. But it's interesting from our perspective. You know, it's just very interesting. That's mine. The
shame on you.
I'm just gonna shut it off.
I think somebody was saying last night that if it rains between Pesach and
Shavuot,
you're supposed to like go out and like drink in the rain and take the bracha, like open your mouth and just like absorb it into you, and then after Shavuot, it's really that's when it really becomes a klala. Like this is kind of a question.
No, this is a klala. For this reason, this was always considered a klala.
No, for other reasons that like if you go outside and literally like open your mouth and drink in the rain.
Okay. I want to see that. It sounds a little like how would you know what I'm saying? You'll show it to me. Send me a link to the article on the internet about that.
No, somebody just mentioned it to me.
Oh, you don't have it on science? Okay. And the reason I bring this up is because it's especially relevant, as we'll soon see. It's especially relevant to the parsha this week. We're going to do the part of Sfirat HaOmer, right from Pesach to Shavuot. We're going to notice a bunch of textual things. And then we're going to notice a bunch of interesting contradictions in the text, or contradictions not only in the text, but in the facts of the text. And then we'll move from there. Okay? So turn to Perek, this week is Parshat Emor. Right? The most famous section in Parshat Emor is Perek Chav Gimel, most famous at least to me, which is the section of the Moadim, of the holidays. Chav Gimel, Perek Chav Gimel, chapter 20, 23. Yeah. Of course, that's interesting. Okay. How many years ago was it? That's the question. What year was it?
I think it was last year.
Interesting. Okay. Perek Chav Gimel, Pasuk Tet. 23:9. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor. Okay. Daber al Bnei Yisrael. Ve'amarta alehem, ki tavo el haaretz asher ani noten lachem uketzartem et ketzira, v'habeitem et omer reishit ketzirchem el hakohen. When you come to the land of Israel that I'm going to give you, you shall cut the cutting uketzartem et ketzira when it's time for the harvest. Not harvest, when it's time for the cutting, right? V'habeitem et omer reishit ketzirchem el hakohen. You should bring, what's an omer?
The first,
what? What's an Omer? Nope. What's an Omer?
It's the first
offering.
Nope. What's an Omer?
It's a quantity.
That's right. It's a quantity. You should bring a quantity, an Omer measurement of the first cuttings to the Kohen. It's just a note. Svirat HaOmer. Omer refers to, it's like a bushel. Lahavdil. You should bring a bushel of what?
Whatever you cut.
It's just whatever. It's like the whatever korban that you bring to the Kohen. Why do you say that? It what is it? In barley. Right, in English. How do you know?
It's
barley. How do you know?
Because that's the korban for something.
Where do you see that?
I don't know. I just know it from something else.
Correct. You're absolutely correct. You know it from somewhere. She's out. I'm not going to... Right, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. You were right. You're absolutely right. It's a korban haomer, it was with barley.
Apparently it doesn't say it here.
Where do you see that? Right. Yeah. The answer is you don't see it. It's absolutely correct. You don't see it at all. Okay? V'heniv et haomer difnei Hashem lirtzonchem, and you shall wave the omer before God lirtzonchem. Translate that word. To your
favor.
To gain your favor. Very famous pasuk. Mimacharat haShabbat yinifenu haKohen. Mimacharat haShabbat. The day after the Shabbat, the Kohen should wave. Now, obviously, there's a very famous question. This we have done before, I'm sure. What is the meaning of Mimacharat haShabbat? And that relates to a very famous sugya in Masechet Menachot. What is Mimacharat haShabbat? And a great debate that's brought down in the Mishnah between the Prushim and Tzidukim. Or the Baitusim also. The great debate is, what does it mean literally, Mimacharat HaShabbat?
The day after.
The day after Shabbat. Meaning?
Sunday.
Okay, we don't hold of Sunday. It doesn't mean anything Sunday. How do we interpret the words Mimacharat HaShabbat?
Yom Rishon.
Not Yom Rishon. No, that's Sunday. in this context. What's the word Rashi? Just to see it. Is Rashi? Rashi. Rashi says, Mimacharat HaShabbat.
It's not Shemitah.
The year after.
No, Mimacharat HaShabbat, the day after Shabbat. Rashi says, Mimacharat Yom Tov HaRishon Shel Pesach. Right, the day after the first day of Pesach. That's Shabbat. She'im ata omer Shabbat Breshit, I'ata yodea ezehu. Right, if you say it's Sunday, you wouldn't know which day it is. You'll notice there's another religion that has a holiday specifically in this time of year based on Sunday. Right, that's from this. Mimacharat, the literal translation of the text, they always going back, always understood that the first Sunday following the major holiday of the spring was a significant day. Sound familiar? Right, the first holiday, and then you count a certain amount of time, and then you celebrate another holiday. Sounds like a different religion. Our religion doesn't interpret the text that way. Our religion says, no, Mimacharat HaShabbat, right, the day after Shabbat, the first day of Pesach, from that day, what do? We offer the offering and then we do the counting, as we'll soon see. Okay? How do we know that this is true? How do we know that Mimacharat HaShabbat means the day after Yontif and it doesn't mean the day after Shabbos?
Tarash Ba'al-Peh.
That's right. It's a tradition.
What did you say?
Tarash Ba'al-Peh. We have an oral tradition. The oral tradition is baked in. I ask you, how did you know that the offering was made of Se'orah and not Chita? You just know.
No,
you just know. Right. Right. So it's derived also, but there's the Tarash Baal Peh is baked into this section, as we'll soon see. It's like and the Chazal make a huge deal out of this issue. It's a huge deal. How do we know? Doesn't the text seem to imply one thing? The answer is yes, the text clearly seems to imply one thing, but we do something entirely different. No one counts Sefirat HaOmer starting on Sunday. We count Sefirat HaOmer starting the day after Pesach, okay? That's number one. We have discussed this before, but it's always worth repeating.
Do they just have the same, like Shabbat and Yom Tov is the same, and Shabbat
and Yom Tov? No, Shabbat normally means 7 days. In this context, Shabbat, clearly they interpret it to mean, it has to mean Yom Tov, that Shabbat. It's clearly reading it out of its normative understanding. Okay? Why do you wave the Omer? What's the waving for? Look at Rashi. Okay, the Hainif, Rashi and Yud Aleph. I just mentioned this because it's relevant to us. Kol Tnufa, what is waving? Molich umevi male umorid. Molich umevi male umorid. They would take this
like
offering, like
lulav.
Very good, like the lulav. Molich umevi laatzor ruchot raot. It was a form of prayer. In and out. Molich umevi to prevent negative winds.
That reminds me of the ruach.
Ma'ale umorid, up and down, la'atzor tlalim ra'im, to prevent destructive dew, i.e.
excessive rain.
Excessive rain, absolutely. Too much moisture, and we all starve. It's nothing less complicated than that, right? We had a good crop, until the money's in the bank, i.e. until the wheat. Is bread, or it's no, until the wheat is in the storehouse. It's not there. And as much as you think everything is good, it's been a good year, the rain rained, you know what I'm saying? It's not until you know for sure, until you're able to know that the produce has been a good year, you're able to harvest it in the proper way. Which is very interesting about, you know, like, how should we say, you know, the phrase of counting your chickens before you hatch, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, everything was good, so we're okay now, right? And it's really not true, because there's so far to go from growing the wheat to having it be food, having it be producible, as we all know. And we'll see this in a few minutes as well. Okay, so that's why this idea is the idea of tefillah. The waving of the Omer was a form of prayer in the Beit HaMikdash, so that the Jewish people would merit, just like we had a good year and we were able to cut the wheat, so too we should continue to have a good year. You know, and it's also fascinating about it, I just thought about this now, the very same rain that was a symbol of the greatest blessing a month ago is now your greatest worry. Because that rain, which you needed in order to grow the wheat, is now going to, if it rains, destroy the wheat.
So what do you think about yesterday?
I'm not sure what to do with that. Well, we do
better. In the right time and in the right place, things can be done for good. And if it's not the right time, it's...
like the same thing.
The same thing. It goes to, you know, drinking wine. You can do it for profanity or for holiness.
Right. Correct.
Yeah. Right.
What does that mean? So you're saying you're just freaked out that the rain, that is a siman klala?
No, I'm saying that because everything, you know, that
just make sure it rains so hard.
It didn't really fit in with the normal.
Oh yeah, I mean.
I'm saying that it's
Chazal said it was.
That's what I was gonna say.
One second. All I'm saying is Chazal said it was a siman klala. That's what Chazal said. For today, I'm not saying the siman the rain yesterday was a klala. What I'm saying is, in ancient times, if it had rained yesterday, it would have been a klala. What I am saying is, what I wanted to say was that what Rieger told me this week was, it wasn't that the rain now is a klala. It was that the fact that it didn't rain in February and March, that was a problem. That was a tremendous problem. So it's a blessing for some people, but it's a real hardship for other people. You know, and this is something that really strikes me. Like, I brought the wheat to show how distant we are from this idea of nature. And as we're going to see, we're so distant from this idea of our sustenance. Like, oh, these are all the nice symbols. It's so beautiful. Such a nice symbol and the same rain. But it doesn't really mean anything for our day to day because it doesn't affect my paycheck. It doesn't, you know what I'm saying?
It will.
What?
It will.
Oh, because the price of wheat flour goes up?
Yeah,
we don't feel it.
Where are we going to get it from?
Russia. You know, yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Somewhere else.
What if it doesn't rain, or what if we don't get sustenance, and what,
so that's your point is exactly my point. We're always talking about the rain, but in reality, other than the fact that, you know, geopolitical and whatever in Israel, it's great, we don't really think about it in terms of our own sustenance. It's not very immediate for us whether it rains or not.
But then how does the people grow?
What? Correct. Correct. But it's not as immediate as it's not. I understand what you're saying. I don't disagree with you. This was intended to be. This is your life. This is what are we going to eat this year? You know what I'm saying? And that sense of connection. That sense. How did they grow it? I don't know. That's why they grew potatoes in England. So that sense of connection, that sense of connection, that sense of really, in Eretz Yisrael, you were supposed to be, you know what I'm saying? The Torah in Devarim says later on, it's Eretz Asher, Enei Hashem Batamid, Mereshit Hashanah, our sustenance was directly connected to the Ribono Shel Olam. Okay, and our ability to survive, our ability to thrive, this idea of an Atati Mitar Tzachem was critical, and for that, it created a connection between us and God. And what I wanted to suggest is, of course it's important, but it's important in a lesser way. It's important not in such a direct way. We're missing something, and I think that that's something that we need to be aware of. It's important for us to realize. You know, and especially we'll see with regard to Sfirat HaOmer. So let's go on. So that's the Tenufa. Okay? Your bet, Vasitem, Biyom HaNifchem Et HaOmer, Keves Tamim Ben Shnato La'Ola La'Hashem. You offer a Keves, a ram, pure ram. Umin Chato Shnei Asronim. Solet pulula b'shemen isherech nichoach v'nisko yayin rivitahin. Okay, and your mincha offering is two esronim and fine flour and oil, okay, and wine, etc. Your dalit.
What's
esronim? Esronim isaron is a measurement also. Shnei esronim. Your dalit.
I have a different question because today with the technology and stuff, if they see there isn't enough rain, like they don't turn the sprinklers on.
There's no sprinklers. You see, they only put the sprinklers in the summer. They didn't lay the pipe. When you run, you realize this. They don't lay the pipe in the winter. Unless they... It doesn't make sense. Right.
The drip irrigation.
The drip fields for the wheat, they can't lay because it's all one big field. It's like one big lawn. You have to... It's like growing grass. They only drip when they do it in the lines.
Oh, okay.
That's my expert opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
You're jolly. I can just say from observation, when I see the wheat fields, they don't drip. They don't do drip.
No, but let them... They had the sprinklers, the ones that are above ground. They could do that for the...
I don't know if they could do it enough. I have no idea. Maybe they would. I don't know. If it got bad enough.
If you see that it's not enough rain, then...
I don't know if you could do it once you see. I think they're dependent on the rain. Even they now are dependent on the rain. I have no idea. It's a good question. Belechem v'kali v'karmel lo tochlu ad etzem ayom hazeh. Ad avi amik. Pasuk yudalet. Okay, ad haviyachem et korban halohechem, chukat olam ledorotechem b'chol mashmatechem. This is the halacha of Shabbat of Chadash. Bread, kali is roasted wheat, karmel is another kind of wheat. You may not eat until this day, until you bring the korban, this korban. This is called the korban haomer. It's a halacha that's definitely applicable today. The Chazal say it's applicable both in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz La'aretz. There's a halacha called Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. You ever heard that phrase? Chadash Asur Min HaTorah?
Yeah.
Okay.
But what does it mean?
Anyway, it means Chadash, new grain, is a Torah prohibition. One is prohibited from eating new grains until the offering of the Omer. And in lieu of the Omer offering, when there's no Omer, you can't eat new grains that were harvested before Pesach until after Pesach, the first day of Pesach. Okay? There's no debate about what it means.
No, meaning
the Chazon Ish also said, the Chazon Ish also used that phrase. It's
technology.
To say, not technology, to say innovation in halacha, right, is asur. And it became a Haredi catchphrase. We don't do new things.
Right.
Stop trying to innovate with your Judaism. Everything is the way it's supposed to be. So they used to use that term, Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. Yes, absolutely.
Right.
So it is a phrase. But halachically, it means Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. Just so you know, in Chutz La'aretz, most kosher organizations are not makpid on Chadash. Right? They don't keep Chadash. Why? Because. The answer is because. Because in Europe, it was impossible for them to know where their wheat was coming from. Jews didn't control the production of wheat and what are they supposed to do. So they relied on a lot of halachic sophistry to imply that maybe it's only, in Chutz La'aretz, it's only Derabbanan, and we don't know when the wheat really came from, etc., etc., etc. But in Israel, without a doubt, it's a deoraita, and the government of Israel follows Chadash. It's clear that in order to have kosher wheat, they hold the wheat. Yeah, they hold it, the harvested wheat. In America, it's unclear. In America, it used to be easy. Because in America, they used to have tons and tons and tons of wheat, and everything was like behind by years. But like, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, they sold all the surplus wheat to Russia when Russia had these tremendous famines. So it became very much more difficult.
But you can order a little booklet.
Oh, yeah.
Is that
Yashan?
Yeah.
Yashan is old. Chadash is new.
So you order this little booklet, and it gives you all the serial numbers, literally serial numbers
on the side of the box. Yes.
That are Yashan that you can buy.
So just so you know,
I used to like stock up.
No, we did it.
We did it for two years.
It was impossible.
We did it until we went whole wheat. Once we went whole wheat, it was impossible.
You
carry the masses around to simple and stuff.
Really? For that reason?
Yeah.
It was very confusing.
Is that why,
we used to stock up on Cheerios.
They have boxes of pretzels and they have a sign on it.
It's kind of Hare Pesa.
No, that's not why. That's something totally different. That's because people don't want to eat chametz
that was sold.
You cannot buy. I don't think you can buy Chadash in Israel. I don't think it's kosher. I don't think you can buy Chadash in Israel. I'd be surprised if you could. Now it's very easy. It was just Pesach. So everything that you're going to eat was harvested before Pesach. It gets much, much harder in the winter months. January, February, March. I know people. We had a member of my shul whose daughter lived in Toronto. And the yeshiva, they were in the yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael in Toronto, and they all kept Chadash. So what they did is they had storage. They used to buy at the beginning of the year just huge quantities of pasta and grain and what have you, and store it in Cheerios and store it. And as the months got, as the months came towards Pesach, they would start bartering. Who ran out of their, elbows? Who ran out of spaghetti? And they would trade with each other. No, I don't think so.
But then you have a thing which is different.
Yeah. I mean, just to understand. I like to say this: Chal of Yisrael is the chumra. Chadash is an isur d'oraita.
It's more important.
It's more important by a magnitude of like a billion. It's a d'oraita. It says in the Torah. You're reading the Torah. Lechem lekali v'chamel lo tachlu ad etzem hayom hazeh. So why are we not makpid on it in the Chutz La'aretz? It's a great question. It's a really good question. I even now, if you,
but
yeah.
Do you buy Cheerios?
What?
Do you buy Cheerios?
We do. We do.
Here we buy Cheerios.
Yeah.
What? Do you buy an OU product?
That's an excellent question. I will look into it. I will find out about it. What she said? It was from last year.
Subbetcha.
Okay. Usvartem lachem. Now we get to the troubling part. No, troubling part. The credit. Usvartem lachem imacharat haShabbat. So remember the Shabbat. What is Shabbat here? Yantiv. The day after Yantiv should count. Miyom habiyachem et omer hatznufa. From the day you bring this waving, this omer quantity of waving stuff, which is what? Barley. Shava shavatot temimot tihyena. It should be 7 pure weeks. Pure whole weeks. Tamim. 7 complete weeks. Ad mimacharat ha-shabbat ha-shvi'it until the day after Shabbat ha-shvi'it. What does Shabbat now mean?
Week.
Week. Everybody see what happened?
Yeah.
Right? Last pasuk, Shabbat meant?
Seventh Shabbos.
No. Yantif. Yantif, right? The first day of Pesach. Now this pasuk, Shabbat means?
Week.
Ad mimacharat ha-shabbat ha-shvi'it tisperu 50 yom. You should count 50 days. Then, v'ikraftem mincha chadasha l'Hashem. And then you offer a new mincha.
But isn't it talking about Shavuos?
But this is 49 days.
Not what? What?
It's on the 50th day. It's a Shabbat HaShvi'i. Isn't that talking about the
Shabbat HaShvi'i. No, mimacharat HaShabbat HaShvi'i. The day after the seventh week is?
No, but isn't it Shavuot?
Yeah, it is Shavuot.
So it's not necessarily Shabbat.
Again, your confusion is a great. It makes my point perfectly. Yeah, the word Shabbat means different things in two consecutive sukkim.
How could that be?
What do you mean?
But it's the same phrase. Macharat Shabbat here refers to Yom Tov Pesach.
And let's read it again.
It says Macharat Shabbat.
Very good. We start down. I understand why you're confused. You're absolutely correct. But this is how Chazal taught us to read the pasuk. Usfartem lachem imacharat Shabbat. In this context, the word Shabbat means
Yom Tov.
The day after Yom Tov, you should begin counting from the day that you bring this Omer offering, right? Which is the second day of Pesach. Then you count Sheva Shabbatot Temimot Tehiyana. You should count 7 whole weeks. One second. Let me just say the means. Ad Mimacharat HaShabbat HaShvi'i. The word Shabbat here means week. Until the day after the seventh week. Tisberu Chamishim Yom. You should count. That'll be 50. You should count. What did you say? How do you translate?
Will be the 50th day.
Whoa, one second. Let's stop right now. Did you just translate the words for me?
What?
Or you read the scroll?
No, I just translated myself.
You did? Translate it again. Until mimacharat hashivah shvi'it, the day after the seventh week,
hisperu
chamishim yom.
You will count the 50th day.
50 days.
50 days.
Good. You didn't say Tishveru Yom HaChamishim.
50 days.
Chamishim Yom. Okay, why did I say? What does he translate in the scroll? I thought you were reading.
It'll be another 50 days.
Until the morrow of the seventh week, you shall count 50 days.
Oh, you count 50 days. Very good. What's my problem?
It sounds like you have Shavuos 50 days later.
No, that's not. It doesn't sound that. It sounds Pesach. Count. What's my problem? There's an obvious problem. Great. What do we count? 49 days. What the heck? And moreover, what did the Torah go out of its way to say?
Seven weeks.
What kind of weeks? Pure weeks, whole weeks. Don't mess up the count. So when you don't mess up the count, when I multiply 7 by 7, what do I get?
49.
No, I get 50, right. You know, exactly. What?
That's why I said it, as it will be the 50th.
Very good. You were answering a question, but you have to ask the question. 100%. I agree, because we don't count 50 days.
That sounds to me like this is a myth that can only be done in Israel.
Why?
Because if they have 2 days of Pesach and they're not sure which is the real day,
come on.
They start counting and they're not sure what the 7 complete day weeks are and when is the 50th.
It's interesting. So why don't they count each day? Hayom, Shmona, Ve'esrim Yom. Vegam, Shiva, Ve'esrim Yom. So the answer is
2 days is because they weren't sure exactly when. Isn't that, aside from it being an honest meaning?
What's that? It is not an onesh for being in Chutzaretz. People might feel that way, but it's not an onesh for being in Chutzaretz. I think it's actually dangerous for us to talk about it that way. Because I feel that observance of the second day in Chutzaretz is in peril in our communities. Because especially people that come and go, which is almost everyone now, many people, I think, they've decided to paskin like the Chabad rabbi in the local town. Chabad paskins that you keep where you are.
Sfardim also.
Not all Sfardim. Okay, the Chabad paskins that way.
You keep where you are.
You keep where you are. You don't keep, right, you don't keep 2 days, you keep where you are. Which means that in our communities, so people say, one second, my neighbor down the road keeps one day, and when he comes to Israel in his apartment, I'm not going to keep 2 days. Are you crazy? And I'm seeing more and more of this phenomenon of one day. The problem is when you keep one day here and then you go back home, how do you keep the second day? What is the second day to you? It's like, yeah, whatever.
But they said they don't have the moed. Here you have the sense of chol moed. It's a totally different feeling. There they need the second day because even the Yom Tov feeling, when you've got cars driving around you and you've got all this other hustle and bustle, that you already feel so different from the rest of the world.
All I'm telling you is the more we talk about Yom Tov as a punishment, the more it increases this notion in people's mind that it's not really a Yom Tov. And we're going to see, and I'm sure we've already starting to see, the lack of observance, the lack of sensitivity to the second day of Yom Tov. And Chazal Paskin, that it's a Yom Tov. L'chol inyan u'l chol davar. It's Yom Tov. When I grew up, I didn't know that it wasn't any difference between the first day and the second day.
My grandmother always ate the brachos on the eighth day of Pesach, though, which means that the second day of Yom Tov had a different... like, she didn't eat the brachos the first 7 days, and the eighth day she ate the brachos. She had matzah b'rayim on the
eighth day. Yeah, I never understood that either. It never bothered me. It's a problem.
And she had that attitude. She wasn't exactly an innovator in halakha.
No, but it's also something...
That's because they don't really want to keep the brachos in the first place. Yeah,
I don't know. But it means that the second day...
All I'm saying is it's not nice of us to talk about it that way. We should try not to, and those consequences. Anyway, for a second. Let's go back to the 49:50 because we digress. How do you solve this problem? Why does the Torah say 50 days if it's really 49 days? It's a tremendous problem. You count 50 days? No.
It sounds like they're both significant.
Let's look at Rashi for a second. Rashi answers the question. He offers an answer. Okay. This, I'm going to give you three answers. I saw these in Nechama. Okay. Rashi says... Ad mimacharat hashabbat hashvi'it tisperu, says Rashi, velo ad bichlal, up to but not including, v'hein arba'im v'tish'a yom. Ad, you count until 50, but not including 50. Okay, up to but not including, ad velo ad bichlal, and then read the next Rashi. Chamishim yom, V'ikravtem mincha chadasha l'Hashem. Says Rashi, B'yom chamishim tekrivuha.
B'yom ha-chamishim.
So let's read the Rashi, let's read the Pasuk again, the way Rashi's reading it. Okay? We'll go back to Tetvav. Usfartem lachem mimacharat ha-shabbat b'yom ha-vechiyam et omet nufa. You should read Sheba Shabbatot miyot miyena. You count the 7 to 8 weeks. Ad mimacharat ha-shabbat ha-shvi'it. Until the day after the 7th week. Stop. Then, Tisperu Chamishim Yom, if you count 50 days, V'ikravtem Mincha Chadasha LaHashem. What day do you offer the Mincha Chadasha? 50. On the 50th day. No problem, right? Everybody like that answer? Why are you going like this?
Why still
says Right. We don't count 50 days. Okay, so Rashi is doing a clever trick. In fact, Rashi knows he's doing a clever trick, because that's not the pshat. In fact, as we all know, you know when you make the cuts, Tisperu Chamishim, he says, Ad mimacharat ha-shabbat shvi'it Tisperu Chamishim Yom. See the little sign under the Yom? Anybody know what that is?
Horseshoe.
The little horseshoe. It's called an Etnachta. Etnachta. The trap is part of the Mesorah. Right, the way you read it, Tisperu Chamishim Yom, pause. Right, so Rashi's ignoring the trap, which is part of the Mesorah. That's not the Peshat.
He told us once what it means.
Anachta is a pause. It's a pause in order to, like, the phrasing, as we see here, phrasing is critical in understanding verses. Right, where you stop in a pasuk has tremendous meaning. What? It's the punctuation. Do you count 50 or do you count 49? Everybody understand? So in the pshat, you're counting how many? In the pshat of the pasuk, how many are you counting?
50.
But Rashi's rereading it to say, no, you count 49. So the punctuation itself is critical. Right? If you would read it, if the guy laning would say, Ad mimacharat ha-shabbat shvi'it, and pause there, you should correct him because it's an incorrect reading. It has ramifications for the understanding of the text. Rather, it's Ad Shabbi Macharat Shabbat Shvi'it Tisperu Chamishim Yom. Pause, and the pause is critical. So that's what Rashi himself admits. Let's read on in Rashi. Rashi says, "Va'omer ani zehu midrasho." Rashi says, "This is not pshat. I'm okay with that. This is the midrash, but this is the midrash that determines the halakha. That's fine. I'm good with that. But aval pshuto, the pshat is Ad Mimacharat Shvi'it." Shehu Yom Chamishim Tisperu. Up to but not including. He says, you're right, it's a problem. So I have to read it until Umikra Misuras, that is, that will be the 50th day. Up to but not including. Okay, so everybody understand the problem? We understand how the Midrash solves the problem. We understand the Rashi's not happy with the problem. I saw another shot. I think Nachama Leibowitz quotes Rabbi David Tzvi Hoffman. I think that's what she quotes. He says, the word timimot don't refer to quality, to quantity, 7 days each week, but quantity, but excuse me.
Quality.
Don't refer to quantity, but quality. What kind of weeks are they? Timimot. Whole weeks. They're not shleimot, they're timimot. What does tamim mean? Pure. Pure in what way? Yaakov was an ish tamim. Spiritually pure. He says, let's go back to the wheat. If really your livelihood, your sustenance, your survival for the coming year depends on these weeks, like it's even worse when you had a good crop. Makes it even harder because we're so close. Right? It's cloudy today. Don't rain, don't rain, don't rain. Please don't rain. Because if it rains, we're sunk. Makes for a very different prayer experience during Sefirat HaOmer as opposed to ours. Rain, not rain? Did we pray for it not to rain? Did our life depend upon the fact that it rained or didn't rain? It's a siman klalan in the abstract sense. But it's not very real to us. We don't really internalize it in this way. It's not something that we see as meaningful to us. It says the Torah, Sheva Shabbatot Timimot Tihyana. These better be good weeks. Right? And if that's true, that makes these weeks all the more meaningful as a lead up from Pesach to Shavuot. Right? Kabbalat HaTorah is not just Kabbalat HaTorah. Hey, let's get the Torah. Stay up all night, whatever, we'll learn, great shiurim. Rather, Kabbalat HaTorah, from Yitzhak Mitzrayim to Kabbalat HaTorah, is the period of time that represents our survival or not. And it makes it for, probably more spiritual, the way we think about it. If we think about it in this way, we think about it in terms of the 40 days from Elul to Yom Kippur. Could you imagine the 49 days from Pesach to Shavuot? Do you get your paycheck or don't you get your paycheck? Well, we'll find out. Right? How's your Shemona Esrei now? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Every day you're davening and davening until you can finally, you can't cut yet. Until it's time, until we can finally move forward. Once the summer comes in and the heat sinks in, everybody's like, okay, then we can move forward. But until you have that release, the anxiety is building and building and building. And only then, when the bracha comes, when Shavuot comes, only then can you really give thanks.
I spoke to a doctor once who said that she thinks that the reason between that there's the two paragraphs are right next to each other, Shmonasei, the Barech Aleinu, the bracha for rain, and Rifa'enu are right next to each other, is because of the farmers. That other than obviously, and then the rain connected with our health and our eating, but also the farmers themselves, that their blood pressure goes up, and their other, other stress. No, seriously.
But you saw a doctor who you said who treats the farmers
right.
Right.
Right. That's what she said. Yeah.
It's absolutely true. But I bring this to show to this idea that we don't think about this way. We don't think about the sphere that way. We just count. Now that you're counting, think about the counting in a different way. I got to get to 50.
And then I'll know.
When I get to 50, I'll know. Right? And you have a date that's meaningful to you, and you know that date is important to you. Your mind is always on that date. It's always on that time. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? When am I going to know if I get the job? We'll let you know in a month and a half. Right? You know what I'm saying? We'll have our process. We're going to vet you.
Then you should count down.
Right, you're going to count up. Oh, that's a very famous question. Why do we count up and not count down? Which we're not going to address today. Okay? So then you bring that Mincha Chadasha. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Mimoshvot Eichem Taviu Lechem Tenufa Shtayim. Shnei Asorim Solet Tihiena Chametz Te'afena Bikurim LaHashem. It's called Chag HaBikurim because you're bringing the Bikurim. Not the Bikurim of the fruits that people that we know are Bikurim, but rather you're bringing, what is Bikurim? From the word Bechor, the first offering, the first grain. But it's not the first grain. Look at Rashi for a second. Okay? One second. Right. Minchot. I'm looking for a certain Rashi that I can't find. I should have marked it. Rashi here says there's a Rashi about Seorim as opposed to Chita. Look at Rashi for a second. Bikurim. Where? Oh, in your yeah, thank you. 1 second. Where does it say Seorim? Here we go. Thank you. Bikurim. Why couldn't I find it? Thank you, Rashi. Mincha Rishonin lechol ha-menachot. Av lemincha kna'ot haba mi-ha-se'orim. Lo tikrab mi-ha-chan min-ha-chadash. Kodem se'a lechem. Right? This was brought from Se'orim. The original was brought from Se'orim. But here, it's brought specifically from Chita. From the wheat. And also the Pasuk notes, if you look at it, what was it brought from? What must it be? It has to be Chametz. It's one of the very few offerings that had to be from Chametz. Okay, it's called the Shtei HaLechem, the Korban Shtei HaLechem. There was also, of course, the Lechem HaPanim. Lechem HaPanim was Chametz? I don't remember. But this, the Torah says specifically it was Chametz. Until now, it's very interesting. So you have this very interesting contrast. The Omer was brought from Se'ora, not from Chametz. And the Shtei HaLechem, and then you count the 50 days, You count the 50 days at the end of the Sefirat HaOmer. You bring this Shtei HaLechem that was brought from wheat that had to be Chametz. What can we read into, what can we understand about the symbology, the meaning of these?
Symbolism.
Thank you. I made up a word. Not symbolism. Okay.
Well, Chametz can stand for pride and ego and stuff like that.
Very good. So what's it doing on Shavuot?
Because you humbled yourself all the way to the shop or being stressed about it's not going to rain, it's all in Hashem's hands, it's not in my hands, and you're completely nothing. And when you finally get there and you do it, you can like breathe and say, okay, now I'm operating my beautiful.
But now it's time to sin? Now it's time to sin?
That I made.
Now it's time for Chametz.
Recognizing a partnership between the physical and the spiritual.
Very nice. Very nice. What? Very nice. Yeah, it's definitely true. Okay, so look at for a second. I'm going to quote for you Abin Kli Akar, and then we'll read the Ramban. Kli Akar says the following: "V'hayu b'shtei halechem chametz asher hayetzer hara nimshal bo." What? Yetzer hara? All of a sudden, it's on Tetzayin, the second paragraph on the left hand side. See the paragraph V'hayu? You have a different one here, right here. V'hayu. Okay. Ki b'lashon Chazal. Chazal said, "Hu nikra seor shebi'isa." It's called the seor. The seor is the leavening agent in the dough. Chametz is called that. The pishe b'makom shatorah mitzuyin ein hayetzer hara yachol hazik. Right? Why do we get rid of the seor shebi'isa on Pesach? We try to remove ourselves from the yetzer hara. Ke'amram, as they say, Chazal Amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu said God, barati yetzer hara, barati lo tavlin, dehainu Torah. I created the Yetzer Hara, and the antidote to the Yetzer Hara was the Torah. That was the tablin, the antidote, the medicine. V'il male Yetzer Hara, lo haya Kadosh Baruch Hu marid haTorah min elyonim el haTachronim. If we weren't human, if we didn't have a Yetzer Hara, we wouldn't have gotten the Torah. Ki b'ta'ana zo natzach Moshe Rabbeinu et ha-malachim. We're familiar with the famous Midrash. Moshe goes up to Har Sinai, and the Malachim say, "What are you going to give him now? You crazy?" And so Moshe says, well, so God says to Moshe, "Moshe, tell him, you tell him." So Moshe says to the angels, what does it say in the Torah? It says, I don't know, keep Shabbat. I don't remember exactly the mitzvah. Or like, don't eat treif. So he says to the angels, you guys eat treif? You have a Yetzer Hara? And they're like, no. He says, well, what do you need it for? We need it. You don't need it. Oh, and they said, okay, fine. Okay? Ve'eshiva Moshe klum Yetzer Hara me'nechem. You don't have a Yetzer Hara. We need the Torah. Why do we mix chametz specifically in the korban that we bring on Shavuot on the day of Matan Torah? Because that symbolizes the need for the Torah and the reason why we have it. Let me ask you a question: is that what you would mention on the day that you received the Torah?
That you have the Yetzer Hara.
Yeah. Oh, we have the Yetzer Hara. Is that the point you would specifically make?
No.
Hey, chametz. Nonetheless, the Torah seems to be making that point. Does that seem unusual or out of the ordinary? So the Ramban has something deeper, much more esoteric. Nah, on Shavuot, dun da da, on Shavuot, and
like
no.
After the Chet HaEgel, and then you have this image of Hashem holding over the Nazar and saying, "You will accept this. You know, you will accept my Torah."
Yeah.
And that's so, it's like, okay, we'll accept
the Torah. That's so inspiring. This is the reason to remind us. Ramban says something more difficult to understand, much, much deeper. Okay? He says, Chametz refers to chimutz. Korban HaTorah meaning
fermentation.
So on Pesach he says, Ulai asur hachametz normally, mimei sheyir mozil midat hadin. Midat hadin is the aspect, the attribute of God that relates to God's justice. You get what you deserve. And the other side of God is, of course, midat harachamim. Right? Revelation. Revelation, God redeemed us. Did God redeem us because we deserved it?
No.
On Pesach, God redeemed us because He promised, because He was compassionate. I'm skipping a little bit. We offer korbanot in order to appease God for His will. Lo yuv'u min hadvarim asher hayad achazar behem l'shanot hativim. We don't bring it from things that change nature, like chametz, that have the ability to corrupt. We don't put honey in our offerings. Rak min hadvarim hamizugim, very basic, simple elements. V'hinei b'chag haShavuot shu yom matan Torah, the day of matan Torah, chag haShavuot, yavi haKorban b'din toda. We bring a korban, which is a din of offering of thanks. Kihu yom atzeret. It is the day of atzeret. V'hamaskil yavin. Someone who understands, which we are not, understands what I'm talking about. V'zeh sod ma'ashamir rabotein. The rabbi said, kol ha-korbanot b'teilim. V'korban toda eino batel le'olam. Kibo matza v'chametz. Ki'inyan ba'olam haba. Chametz refers to the midat hadin versus Midat HaRachamim. Says the Ramban, on the day that you get the Torah, there has to be an element of Midat HaDin. An element of getting what you deserve. An element of Chametz. I'm not entirely sure what he's talking about, obviously. What I think he's talking about, what I think he's alluding to is that the Torah has to be given to us in a sense of we want God to bring justice to the world. There's an element of purity to it. But it's not a purity of compassion necessarily. We want there to be an element of din as well. But even more than that, Shavuot, and this is a theme that I'm leading to, that I wanted to bring everything to us. Shavuot represents the idea of combination of opposites, of different themes. The idea of the, Cheryl, you're going to like this, the idea of taking two opposite possibilities and showing that they can coexist together. For example, you have chametz on the one hand, and you have matzah. Right? You start with matzah, and you have chametz. It's brought from two different types of korbanot. The purity from sin and sinfulness. On the one hand, we're malachim, on the other hand, we're human beings. And when we receive the Torah, we do so with full acknowledgement that we do so as people, as human beings. With all that implies, with all the sinfulness that implies. And the Torah is here to counteract and purify. But not because of, not in spite of the fact that we're human, but because of it. We receive the Torah not necessarily because, oh, we need it, but we receive the Torah because it's for us. It allows us to combine the two. So you have the matzah and then the chametz. You also have the 49 and the 50. How can you have 49 whole days that are also 50 days? Isn't it impossible? The answer is yes. But nonetheless, we find a way to make the 50th day. We count 49 days, and then it's the 50th day. You should just know that even the date of Shavuot is like not 100% clear. Combination of the two. And finally, and most importantly, this whole period of time represents the combination of the Torah Shebichtav, the written Torah, and the Torah Shebaal Peh. Without the Torah Shabbat Peh, all of this is meaningless. It's not 49, it's not 50, it's not, we don't know what Shabbat, we don't even know what Shabbat is. Right, so how can you have a Torah where you, which do you follow? Do you follow the written Torah or do you follow the oral Torah? Which is dominant? And the answer, of course, is
combination.
We need both. They go together. Right, this is the idea of merging opposites in such a way that we find coexistence, that we find coalition. And that's exactly the idea of that we start with the barley. Barley is considered, at their time, they didn't have chalet, of course. So they took barley, was considered an animal food. You offer a korban of animal food, and in the end you're bringing wheat. You're bringing solek, you're bringing fine flour. And the idea of perfection of humanity is taking us from this and making us into that. And this is what spirituality is all about. I think this was what the period of, this anguish period, this tremendously difficult period of Sefirat HaOmer was. On the one hand, it was a time of great joy, moving forward, spirituality. At the same time, it was a time of spiritual introspection. Shavuot Timimot Tiyana. When they received the Torah, they were ready to receive the Torah. Because they were praying each and every day. And that's something that, you know, we think about, we don't think about. I count the Omer. It's hard to think about these things when you count the Omer, because it's not as meaningful to us. We have to be aware of the fact that these deeper meanings are missing in our lives, and try to infuse it as such. And even though we live in much more sure states, we're not really as sure as we think we are. And that our goal is to, when we count the Omer and we lead to our Shavuot, to try to find these deeper spiritual meanings and to make it something that allows us to come closer to God while we're counting towards Matan Torah. All right, we'll stop here.